Welcome to another All Business Podcast. This is Ted Schubel. Thank you for bringing us up on your phone or your computer or wherever you are listening. We talk with area business owners here, the people that make the region work. When we come back, we're all business.
The All Business Podcast is supported by Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com. Most folks who work here love living here, and that makes a difference. At Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com, they're proud to work the hometown advantage around the clock, connecting local employers to local job seekers. Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com makes it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. And if you're looking for a good local job, search jobs and apply online right now. Get the advantage of finding a job close to home at Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com. Local jobs that work.
We're at 509 Jackson Street in Fredericksburg, the William Mason Violin Shop. Bill and Elaine Mason here, Christina Wan here. We're over by Roxbury. It looks like a small storefront, but Bill Mason, Bill, my friend, there is a lot here.
Well, Ted, it's a lot bigger than what I thought it was going to be, too. You know, it's like it's taking on a life of its own, and it just keeps growing and growing, and whenever there's a need, it seems like a need in the community that needs to be filled, we try to step up and fill it. And as you know, you went down to the newest space, which is the Sound Post. We're building soundproof studios in there. We're going to have lessons, you know, violin, viola, and cello lessons, and chamber music rehearsals over there, too. So that's just another new addition to all the other stuff that we do here.
You're across from right by Roxbury and in the old creamery.
Mm-hmm. Andy Lynn is a good buddy of ours. He visited us yesterday and hung out for a little while. So, yeah.
How'd you get involved with violins yourself? Is this something you grew up with?
I grew up around music. I started playing guitar when I was probably 16 or so years old. Even when I was younger than that, if my dad gave me a toy, I would take it apart instead of playing with it, and that's kind of what I did with instruments, too. So, you know, when I was in my teens, I was taking guitars apart, and I've been working on instruments, string instruments, for a very long time, but not professionally until 2004.
How did you get to Fredericksburg, and how did this place get here?
How did I get to Fredericksburg?
Yeah.
I've been coming into Fredericksburg all my life. I went first grade to fourth grade at Chancellor Elementary. I remember when Central Park was actually a dairy farm. And then we moved to King George County. And so I've been coming here for a very, very long time. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and my great-great-grandfather has been coming into Fredericksburg. So I knew the place was here.
Violins, though. I didn't realize there were so many types of I didn't realize that you could make a living like you have with violins.
I didn't really know that either. I'm a horticulturist. I have a degree in hort. And my last job was at Lewis Skinter Botanical Garden in Richmond. And, in fact, in Richmond is where I met Elaine. She is a Richmonder. And I was taking violin lessons at the time. And I was thinking about a career change. I need to do something different. Well, I've been working on guitars, mandolins, banjos, belalakas, zithers, and everything with strings on it for a very, very long time. And again, taking violin lessons, I was thinking, what would I like to do for the rest of my life? Because I didn't want to really be in the hot sun in my 50s and 60s. So I went to violin making school. Elaine and I actually, she was working for the state. We quit our jobs, packed up, and moved to Pennsylvania, and plopped down with no work, with nothing. And I took a 4-year violin apprenticeship program up in Pennsylvania.
Elaine, talk about that. That's talk about scary. And how'd you feel about that?
Well, it was scary, and once the wave started going, I had to go with it. But I remember when it got accepted, and I went to a local gallery and was talking to the lady that owned it, PJ. Mm-hmm. And I just sobbed. I was like, my whole life is changing, you know, and I was scared, excited, confused, you know, but we did it. We just said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We'll make it happen. You know, it was just, but it was scary. Yeah. And I was leaving my family. I was leaving, you know, a house that I owned and a secure job and but I didn't look back. I've never looked back. It's been just as scary some steps of the way, but at the same time,
it's just as scary now.
You grow,
still scary.
You learn where your limits are, you overcome your limits, and you keep going further.
So was it always your plan, Bill, to go through apprentice school and then come and do violins in Fredericksburg?
Absolutely not. I never thought in a million years I would be doing this. Never. I really thought I would be working at the Botanical Garden for the rest of my life. I know I always wanted to do something with my hands, and even gardening I did with my hands, and this is very much detailed craftsmanship, and I knew I wanted to get into something like that.
Wow. Wow. Because, you know, talk about, you know, learning something, you said 4 years of being an apprentice.
4 years, and that's just enough to really get you in trouble. This industry takes a very, very, very long time to get good at, to master it. By no means are we master makers. It's so intense, and there's so much to learn. Just the violin bridge itself, I've said this many times, it took me 10 years just to get to a point where I feel like I'm cutting a violin bridge properly. Of course, a violin bridge is not just cut and thrown under the strings. It's tuned, and it has certain cuts that it has to make, and it takes a long time. You don't go on YouTube, Ted, and download a bridge cutting video, and you're cutting bridges. It takes a very, very long time.
Christina, when I came in this today, you're working on something over there. And so how did you get here? What's your violin story?
Well, I was born and raised in New York, just north of the city. And I have two older brothers who studied violin. And being the youngest, I always wanted to do what they did. And so I ended up taking violin lessons and studied with a wonderful teacher growing up and continued through college and eventually went to the University of Maryland for a master's degree in violin performance. And after I graduated, I performed professionally with a number of ensembles and taught private lessons. And eventually, I decided I'd need a little bit of a change in pace. I was getting a little complacent, and I thought I needed a new creative outlet. And so I was very curious about what goes on in a violin shop and searched everywhere in Maryland looking for a place who would be interested in accepting an intern or apprentice, and eventually found Bill and Elaine's shop down here in Fredericksburg, and they were very gracious and generous enough to offer me an apprenticeship. And so I came down here back in 2013 and studied violin making with Bill. And a little bit of bow rehair, and it just caught on. And so 3 years ago, I moved down here and started working full time with Bill and Elaine.
Your story's a lot like Bill and Elaine's story.
Yeah, it's. I mean, as a player, you just don't know what goes on in a violin shop, what goes into making an instrument, and all the different components and intricacies involved, and it really opens your mind into all the background, the history that's involved in all these instruments.
Knowing now what you do about, as you're learning about how it's made now, has it made you a better player in some ways?
I am definitely more aware of tone. Back then, I wasn't really paying attention to all the different colors, the different qualities and tone that every instrument has. I mean, it's unbelievable. If you take a tree and you make two instruments out of the same wood, you'll get two completely different sounding instruments from the same wood. You know, it's all comes down to the graduations of the plates, and it comes down to the weights and thicknesses and the tuning of different components of the instrument, and it's unbelievable how many varieties you can have.
It's like a fingerprint of, you know, there's no two fingerprints. Sounds like the same thing with a violin.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Every instrument is different. Not only does every instrument sound different, the The color's different, the shape's different, it could be a little bit longer. And we're talking millimeters here. And the average person doesn't see things the way we see things. We're looking at things like this every day very close, and we can tell millimeters. In fact, we work in the metric system. But every instrument might be a little bit longer, a little bit shorter, wider, fatter. The F-holes are different. The playability. Just the playability, just the response when you drag the bow across the string, how that string reacts. Does it react immediately? Is it sluggish? All these things go into the construction of the violin. Believe it or not, the arching can have a lot to do with playability of how the instrument's responding.
We're at the William Mason Violin Shop, 509 Jackson Street, this week on the All Business Podcast. Bill and Elaine Mason here, Christina Wan here, as we talk about violin making and such in Fredericksburg. This keeps growing and growing, Bill.
We've reached our limit.
You have reached the limit.
In space, we've reached our limit.
Yeah.
As far as bringing in employees, bringing in more professionals, that remains to be seen, and we want to make that happen. I want to see three or four other more people in here every day doing things, getting things done, making, repairing, restoration. I'd love to see our rental program grow. I would love to start having a bigger rental program, but to do that, we have to have more people. Now, there's three of us here, and so we've had to cap a few things, so we can handle it, right? Because it could be very easily, with the snap of the fingers, a lot bigger than us. But we need more people to make it bigger.
Have somebody like Christina here doing what she does and as an apprentice, that's got to be a huge help.
I'd like to have two or three more of her. That would be fine.
No, Christina has bridged the creation of instruments to the creation of music. She has found the connection between she supplies us with the connection between fine classical players and fine classical instruments.
Each instrument that you work on, did you play everything that you work on and make?
Yes. I think tone is very important to a player. If they pick up an instrument and they don't like how it sounds, they probably will put it back. So we're constantly trying to find ways of improving tone. And there's so many endless possibilities.
Yeah.
The rental, it sounds like you do a lot with rent, with rental, with schools and things like
that. That's the backbone of the shop, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And we love working with kids. The kids, they come in, it's a family affair. They've got the brothers and sisters, mom and dad, and they're trying out a violin, and they're, it's a family event. They all pack it in and come on down here. And so when they walk out, the little kids are just as excited for their older brother or sister, and it's like, yay. I remember shopping for furniture when I was young, and it was a big family affair. And that's kind of the feeling we get. And we want them to walk in here and see this and walk away feeling like they've been into a magical place. I remember magical places when I was a kid and going in and going, oh, wow, this is so cool, and I want the kids to experience that because, when they're grandparents and they're talking, it'll keep the tradition. This is a tradition that has been passed on for centuries. So
I got into horticulture when I was probably around 9 or 10. I took a field trip to Gunston Hall, George Mason's home, and they had the boxwood garden out back, the maze. That stuck in my mind. To this day, it's still in my mind, and that's why I became a horticulturalist. Just by that one trip to Gunston Hall when I was a kid.
And you did talk about this. This is a magical place. I mean, the violins, they're hanging around here, and there's just something about a violin as far as an instrument goes that makes it, it's just looked upon differently than other instruments.
It's superior. It is, I am biased. The instrument is just beautiful. It's an art piece. It is absolutely an art piece. Not only does it make beautiful music, the colors are beautiful, the shapes are beautiful. I guess it's been maybe a guesstimate of maybe 6 years ago, we did a show at Artful Dimension where we had like 25 violins hanging from the ceiling in mass, and it was just beautiful. So not only are you, we're not hearing the violin, but just the beauty of it, the wood, the figure on the back, the colors, it's just beautiful. The scroll itself is perfection.
How long can a violin last?
Well, let's talk about Antonio Stradivarius and Niccolo Amati. We're talking over 300 years now that they're going. And now, when I was in violin making school, the master used to he said a lot. One of the goals was to make violins that are going to last. Okay, so we know that they can last over 300 years. Now, well, one of mine, I don't know. I won't be around to know. But again, that's the whole quality thing, and that's why fine woodworking is really superior than factory made instruments.
The human element.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and what I like, I mean, this is really the kind of the mom and pop atmosphere here. The how much you all love violins and violin music and wanting to help people get, I mean, if you're either getting into this or even you've been in it, you're going to get a lot of very tender loving care here, and your violin is.
Oh, absolutely. It is a very family oriented thing. When the kids come in, we're very open. We let everyone just, wherever you want to go, just go, and the kids will come in here. They feel free to walk in the other shops. It's very family oriented.
Christina, how many violins do you have personally, of your own?
Of my own, I have two. My first full size violin I bought, I guess, when I was in seventh grade. And recently I just purchased a secondary instrument I did some repair work on it, and I'm tinkering with it and just pushing its limits and seeing how far I can take this one. But it's different. They both have different sounds, and I love each one individually.
How many violin players do you know when they buy a violin, the first thing they do is take the top off of it?
Who would do that?
Christina.
Well, so tell me about that.
Well, actually, when I bought it, it did have a crack on the top. And so that needed to be fixed by taking the top off, re-gluing the crack, cleating it, and then re-gluing the top back on. So, once again, just looking on the inside of an instrument was really fascinating to see how it was built. And there's a lot of learning that I experienced from that.
Is that something you recently did?
Yes. Very recently.
Could you have done that before you started working with Bill and Elaine here?
No, that would not have been. I didn't have any woodworking experience. I'd never used a hand tool. I never used any of the machines. So I learned all of that from Bill, and it's been incredible.
Bill, when we walked around beforehand, and I commented to you just about how you use math and you use chemistry and you use all kinds of you. All the type of classes in school that I used to think, why am I here? How am I ever going to use this? You use everything here.
All the time. Geometry, physics, acoustics, chemistry, science, history, craftsmanship, engineering. Am I leaving out anything? All these things are involved in the violin. And when we give tours, the kids come in and they have no concept, of course, of what goes into it. And they leave here with a whole new concept of the instrument. It's really wonderful.
Well, and I have a whole new concept of just how many, I think, people and kids and people in the community who play a violin after being here, seeing all the violins and in the work. A lot of people are involved with a violin.
Oh my gosh. When I grew up in the area, Spotsylvania, Stafford only had one high school apiece, and now we're talking five high schools in each county.
Yeah.
Five middle schools in each county. And Fredericksburg, this is another reason why I knew Fredericksburg would be a great place for a violin shop, because, in my opinion, is probably growing faster than any area in the country right now. It has gone crazy. We're established. We're rooted in, right? And all the kids coming in, you know, new families coming in who work in D.C., the D.C. area, they bring a whole new culture, a whole new way of life, new passion and love for music and art. And Fredericksburg is just... it's taken off, and we're a big part of that. The next generation of this violin shop will really be on fire. We'll really reap the benefits of this shop. Yeah, hopefully I'll be playing golf by then.
Do you play violin much these days?
No. I work all the time. I'm surrounded. It's a shame. I'm surrounded by all these beautiful instruments, and I don't play as much as I would like to.
Do you play violin at all, Elaine?
Musical one bit. I'm okay. Not at all musical, but
we need clappers.
We need listeners. Yeah, everybody needs a good audience. My appreciation has grown since I've been here. Christina has helped with that too.
Christina has brought a lot into the shop as far as classical music, composers. It's a whole new. I grew up in King George, and it was very. The only classical music I knew of was on Bugs Bunny cartoon. Christina has brought in a whole new element and a new world, and it's very exciting.
Christina, how being someone who performs and all, how long do you practice each day?
Well, honestly, I spend a lot of time here in the workshop making, so I don't have as much time as I want to practice and play, but I still play with one orchestra called the Pan American Symphony Orchestra, and they're based in D.C. They're a tango orchestra, which is a little different, but they're a lot of fun, and we generally have 4 to 5 concerts a year and a couple of rehearsals before each concert, so that's where I get my playing in.
And then, interestingly enough, there is a viola player in her orchestra who is also a maker. Mm-hmm. And for an orchestra to have two makers and players, I think is very unique.
And he'll be here
next
week.
Yeah, he'll be here next week.
He studied in Cremona, Italy, by the way, so we're very much looking forward to him being here. Cremona, Italy is like the capital of violin making. That's where Stradivari lived.
The birthplace.
Amati, Guarneri, and Ruggieri, and all these other guys. So.
We are the All Business Podcast this week. We're having a great time at the William & Mason Violin Shop, 509 Jackson Street. If someone comes in, if they've got a damaged violin, do you take care of that too?
All the time. Repair and restoration constantly, all the time. In fact, there's one over there that used to belong to someone's great-grandfather. We get a lot of sentimental stuff. This belonged to my great-uncle or something like that. And we do a lot of repair and restoration. Bow rehairs and bow restoration, meaning if you need a grip or winding or you break the tip, we can repair the bow and rehair it. We do a lot of everything all the time.
It seems like violins, especially I'm just looking at them and thinking with kids, that you have to take how sturdy are they?
You know, I've told a lot of people this. They're very delicate, but yet they're very strong. It's just like playing one. You got to know when to make the note sound very sweet, and then you got to know when you can dig in and then really get a big sound out of it. That's exactly how the instrument itself is. It's very delicate, but yet it can take a lot of beating, if that makes sense.
Okay. When you make a violin, start to finish, mm-hmm. and I guess they all are different, but how long would a violin take to make?
The number one most asked question in the violin world is that. You want to answer that?
I think the average would be 250 hours. So that's
250 hours?
Yeah, that's the general consensus. But if you've made hundreds of violins or other instruments, then you can probably do it within a month.
How young do violin players start? If I've got kids and I'd like them to at least experience this, how early can they start?
I started when I was 4, and I've heard people who started when they were 2. I don't know if I believe that.
I've seen them put a violin-shaped object in an 18-month-old toddler's hands. Now, they don't really know what they're doing. Yeah. It's more to get accustomed to it. But, you know, as far as we're concerned, we would love every child to have that experience. The other thing to keep in mind, though, is school instruction doesn't begin till middle school or in public school.
Yeah,
so
we
that's
would like to work on changing
we would
that.
Love to have, you know, elementary school kids getting used to it, mm-hmm. because I feel like personally, if you start in middle school, you've missed a few years where you could. On the other hand, there's Misty Copeland, who started dancing at the age of 11, and now she's a principal with, who is it? I forget which dance group. But, you know, there are exceptions to that rule.
So, Christina, I mean, you're a great one to ask. You know, what are the benefits of you know, learning and making the violin an instrument you learn on?
Well, there are so many things that I've learned since I came here. It's just, again, being a player, you always think about the tone of how to get that particular sound that maybe you've heard a soloist play. And there's just so many intricate details that you don't know unless you've actually, you know, hang out with violin makers and pick their brains about how they go about making an instrument sound like a soloistic instrument. So I'm continuing to learn. I'm still very much fascinated by the entire process and the history, and I would love to study more of the old Italian instruments and, you know, get a better sense of how they made instruments. And it's, there's so many unbelievable instruments out there to study.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we've got to do this. I want to get the three of you together again. There's just other things that I would like to talk. This has been fascinating stuff.
We could be in here for days.
Oh, you're
talk for days.
In each of these rooms of what you do, we could do that. Bill, if someone wants to get in touch with you, I know you got a website, and what's the best way to get in touch with you?
You can email me on the website, or you can call and talk to Elaine, you know, or you drop by. I'm always here.
Sounds like it. And Elaine, I want to come by because I understand that you're working on, you're doing some welding and making a large violin.
A large violin. Well, that's, yeah. I am, like I said earlier, I studied sculpture in college and I set it down in 1983, 84 and hadn't picked it up until 2 years ago when I bought my plasma cutter. So it's a whole new technology. I'm relearning. Before, I used oxyacetylene torches, and you know, it was a whole different medium as far as what I was doing. Now, you know, with technology, it's been improved, but I still have to come up to that new learning curve. And I'm learning, and it's interesting, and I love it, and it's dirty, and you know, there's nothing glamorous about it, but it's, when you're done, you go, wow, this is what I did.
We hope
to
have an 8-foot violin silhouette out front of the shop here pretty soon.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to that. Let me know when it's done. Christina, thank you. And do you have any concerts coming up?
Not until the fall.
Okay.
So we're pretty much done with our season.
Okay.
So October, I think, will be our first concert.
All business at 509 Jackson Street in Fredericksburg, the William Mason Violin Shop. Bill and Elaine Mason, Christina Wan, thank you all. Thank you all for all of this.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please link, comment, and subscribe. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. You can also find us on Channel B Online at b1015.com, keyword podcasts. If you'd like to talk about your business, I want to hear from you. Ted at WFVARadio.com, the best way to get in touch with me. Ted at WFVARadio.com. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Until next time, when again, we are all business.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by the host and guests on this podcast are their own and not necessarily those of Centennial Broadcasting.